waiting, waiting to see if it lands in the outfielder's glove or sends me home. Boom, over the fence. I pump a fist and shout. Nick tosses the bat on the dirt and trots down the baseline as I run home. Watching him round the bases sends my father whooping from the makeshift dugout. Nick's home run has put Dad's team ahead at the top of the ninth. I hold out a hand and slap palms with our slugger as he nears home plate. Nice work, Grand Slam, I say, since he's knocked out a few so far this season. Once his foot hits the plate, the chorus from Beautiful by Christina Aguilera plays. Interesting choice. Not my first pick for Nick, but Mr. Offerman's daughter appointed herself announcer for the game and has been picking the tunes for hits, homers, and strikeouts. Emily holds up a blue, oval-shaped handheld speaker that's streaming music from her phone. She shakes her hips and encourages our team to rock out with her. Her sisters cheer her on from the three rows of creaky metal bleachers. My father high-fives Nick as he walks off the field. You're my ringer. Your check will be in the mail, my dad jokes as we head toward the team bench near the bleachers. Charlotte waves and smiles. My heart beats faster as I look at her. Tonight, I tell myself. I've got it all planned. I'm taking her to her favorite Italian restaurant in Chelsea, and I'm going to put my heart on the line. I'll tell her she's the one, and then hope to hell that the woman in the page six photo is the one who's coming to dinner, not the woman who said, she's just my best friend. I have no clue if Charlotte only sees me as a friendly fling, or if she wants more, like I do. But I know how I feel. I want her to be my best friend, my lover, and my partner. I want her to be all mine, and that's why this morning, after we brushed our teeth, of course, I asked her out on a real date. She said yes. The realization that I have an official date tonight with the only woman I've ever fallen in love with makes my palms sweat. I'll be going out on a limb and taking the biggest chance of all when I tell her that faking it led to making it for me. My pulse races with the rabid hope that this isn't a one-way street. Hell, she's holding my keys, wallet, and phone in her purse during the game. There's got to be room for the old ticker, too, right? I break away from Nick, run up the stands, and give Charlotte a quick kiss. Her lips glide across mine, and she sighs softly. In seconds, Ciara's "Pucker Up" blasts from Emily's speaker. Damn, that girl is fast. I head down the bleachers. Another player from the Catherine's team steps up to the plate, and my dad cheers him on. Dad's in a good mood today. Not only because we're winning, but because the papers were signed this morning. His attorney is doing a final review and filing them with the business authorities on Monday. By then, if all goes well, Charlotte and I will be a real couple, so we won't even need to break up. Amazing how everything is coming together perfectly. As I grab a spot on the bench, Nick speaks to me in a low voice, pretending he's talking to Charlotte. Oh, hey, Char, how's it going? You still enjoying dating Spencer? What's that? You love his big ego? Oh yeah, it's so huge. I love it too. He turns to me, his voice deadpan. So how am I doing at going along with things? I pretend to gaze in wonder. Amazing. It's almost as if you make shit up for a living. Then I drop the snark. And, incidentally, I'm hoping it won't be pretend much longer. He raises an eyebrow in a question. I shrug happily and speak quietly. It was fake. It became real for me. I hope for her, too. I'm going to talk to her tonight and see if she feels the same. Nick offers a fist for knocking. Go for it, he says. No teasing, no sarcasm now. You two always seemed right for each other. Yeah? Why? I ask, eager for corroboration. But he laughs and shakes his head. Dude, what do you think I'm going to say? He clasps his hands together and bats his eyes, overdoing the hearts and flowers. Oh, it's so sweet the way you finish each other's sentences and both like gummy bears. He drops the act and shrugs. All I know is you've got my vote. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I pause, then narrow my eyes. Incidentally, if you ever touch my sister, that's grounds for me to shave your head in the middle of the night and dye your eyebrows orange. His eyes widen, and he clutches his locks.
Not the hair. It's where all my power comes from.
Exactly. So, beware. We take our spots on the field for the bottom of the ninth, and when the other team doesn't score, Raise Your Glass by Pink commemorates this Saturday morning victory. I trot off the field and high-five my teammates. I slap palms with Mr. Offerman. This is going to be all yours now, I joke, gesturing to the team. Can't wait, he says. I love it all. I hope you'll stay on the team and your friend, too. We'll need a big bat if we want to win the championship next season. Man, it's a weekend softball league. Chill out. I hope you win it all, I say, staying cordial through the end, as Pink sings about all the underdogs and Emily mimes holding a glass to go along with the words of the song. As I stuff my glove and hat into a duffel bag, I glance at Charlotte, who's getting into the celebration too, bumping hips with Harper. And it's pretty cool to see her like this with my sister. It feels like this could be a regular thing. Charlotte hanging out with my family as the woman by my side, not just as my friend. I can picture it all unfolding before me. Days and nights of her. Real instead of fake. The music stops abruptly, and Pink's unbridled enthusiasm for celebrating is replaced by a tinny echo. Like when someone cues up a new song with the scratch of a record. But it's not music that comes from the handheld speakers that Emily clutches. It's voices. Or rather, my voice. Are you not feeling well? Do you have a headache from last night or something? I freeze. My blood rushes cold as the memory of when I'd said those words slams into me with stark clarity. In the bathroom with Charlotte at MoMA. My jaw clenches and my chest seizes up because I know what's next. My eyes search the crowd that gathers near home plate. It's sparse, but all the key players are here. The Offerman clan, my parents, me. Like statues. Listening to Emily's recording of my private conversation with Charlotte. I can't fake this. The words came from Charlotte a week ago. Adrenaline kicks in. The drive to stop this right now. I take a step closer to Emily and gesture for the speaker as my voice reverberates, amplified from days ago. The engagement? My father's brow furrows. He meets my eyes, and a flash of disappointment appears in his, chased by embarrassment. Mr. Offerman stares at me, then snaps his gaze to Charlotte on the bleachers. Her mouth is open. And her eyes are full of terror. Must stop now. I rush to Emily. Maybe I can grab the speaker from her hand and hit stop before the next words sound. Stop it, please, I plead, reaching for her phone, her speaker, her sense of motherfucking privacy. She shakes her head and holds the speaker high as the next line from Charlotte rings out loud and far too clear.
No, that's fine. The pretend engagement is fine.
Emily hits stop, and I expect her to turn to me and say, caught you. But instead, Abe appears, walking around the edge of the makeshift bleachers to join Emily on the field. I do a double take and point at him. He stands next to Emily and smiles at her like a proud teacher. Emily stares at her dad.
Do you believe me now that I don't want to study art at Columbia?
Columbia. Emily's going to the same school as the tenacious reporter. That must be how she knows him. Mr. Offerman's nostrils flare as he steps forward. Emily, now is not the time to discuss your intended major. What on earth is this about? Yeah, I'm kind of wondering the same thing. Especially because I thought this was about Charlotte and me, but it also seems to be about a father and a daughter. Emily glares and parks her free hand on her hip.
I have no interest in studying art. I've told you that for years. You never listen to me. You never listen to what I want. I want to study business in college, like you did. But you think business is a man's world. You're wrong, though, because I just saved you from selling your business to a liar. Ever since I met them, I knew something was off, she says, gesturing wildly to me, then to Charlotte. So I talked to Abe at dinner at McCoy's, since we realized I'm going to the same college he attends. And guess what? He felt the same way about the happy couple, and we decided to work on it together, to get to the bottom of this business deal and the heart of the story. And it's this, Daddy. She points at me, the accused. Spencer Holiday faked his engagement to Charlotte Rhodes so you'd buy Catherine's, thinking it would appear like the family-friendly and wholesome business you want it to be, not something associated with someone best known for discussing dick pics in the business trades. Her feet are planted wide, her hands on her hips, determination in her eyes. How does that sound for a story that Abe can run tomorrow? Got an official press comment? Abe and Emily both stare at us with smug delight, but I zero in on Emily. Mostly, I want to laugh and claim she's making all this up, because the little pathological liar is off her meds. But some small part of me wants to applaud the girl for her guts. I don't like being the target of her underhanded tactics, but holy fucking balls. Emily has some big gonads, and she's sticking it to her father for being a sexist pig. She's also been playing all of us. That flirting at dinner was never flirting. She was playing me, trying to get to the bottom of the lie she sniffed out. Is this true? The question doesn't come from Mr. Offerman. It comes from my father, the man I admire, the man I respect, the man who taught me to be better than I've been for the last week. Shame washes over me as Dad sidesteps Mr. Offerman. He's not looking at the man on the other side of the business deal. He's looking at his son. His flesh and blood who lied to him, who embarrassed him, who hoodwinked everyone here. My face burns. The fact that my feelings for Charlotte have become real is meaningless. None of that matters. I nod and start to fashion an answer. But the slap of flip-flops on flimsy metal interrupts me. Charlotte races down the makeshift bleachers and across the grass and dirt. Stop, she says, holding up a hand. She's twisting her ring on her finger. The fake engagement is my fault. Don't blame Spencer. My father furrows his brow and turns to her. What do you mean? It was my idea, she says, contrition in her tone, guilt in her eyes. I asked Spencer if he'd pretend to be engaged to me so my ex would stop bothering me so much. Her voice is heavy. She tugs at the ring, and I grit my teeth, hating to see it come off her finger. That's not true, I say. She's taking the fall, and I can't let her. This is my mess, and I need to clean it up. She raises her chin. It is true, she says, her tone firm and certain. Her eyes glare at me and me alone. They say, don't you dare interrupt me. Charlotte looks to my dad, then Mr. Offerman. It's all on me. I needed Spencer to pose as my fiancé so my ex would leave me alone. I live in the same building as him, and it's been awful since the split. Everyone knows he cheated on me, and I've dealt with their stares and looks of pity. But when he started begging me every day to take him back, I needed to do something drastic to make it stop. Mrs. Offerman nods imperceptibly. Her eyes seem to say she understands Charlotte's plight. Charlotte is so damn convincing, but then, she doesn't have to be convincing. She just has to be honest. Nearly everything she's said so far is the truth. Even if the initial idea came from me, the rest of her story adds up. Unlike my ruse. Charlotte, you don't have to do this, I say softly, just to her. She shakes her head and speaks to the group. No, I do have to do this. I asked him to pretend to be engaged to me so I could finally have some peace where I live. But please don't blame Spencer. The fake engagement was all my choice, and he went along with it because he's a really great guy and he just wanted to help me. We planned everything, every detail, including how we would end it. She sighs but holds her chin high. After 1 week, and now it's been a week, So, I guess this is it. She tugs off the ring. Her eyes are darker than I've ever seen them before. Inscrutable. She looks to the others. It was never real. But not for the reasons you think. She plunks the ring in my hand and curls my fingers around it. Thank you for pretending for me. She wraps me in a hug. I'm so sorry, she whispers, and my muscles tighten with a sick hope as I wait for more words just for me, words like, I'd like to thank the Academy, or do I get a gold star for that performance? But they don't come, and her apology feels as real as any words she's ever uttered. She breaks the embrace, casts her eyes to everyone else, and repeats herself. I'm sorry. She leaves, walking away from me. No, just kidding, comes my way, because this is all too real, and each step she takes crushes me. Like a fool, I stand frozen at home plate, my insides a churning mess of emotions as the embarrassment shifts into something worse. Hurt. So much damn hurt, like my heart has become bruised. She doesn't love me. It was never real. Mr. Offerman turns to my father. His nostrils flare. His eyes are hard. I don't care whose idea it was. I don't do business with liars. The deal is off, he says, slicing his hand through the air. Rihanna's Take a Bow plays from Emily's sound system. I cringe, and Mr. Offerman roars at his daughter.
Enough!
On that count, we agree. Chapter 26. My head spins, and my chest has a gaping hole in it. That doesn't stop Harper. She pulls no punches. Look. Her hand clamps on my shoulder as she marches me through the park, Nick on my other side. Your to-do list today just got a whole lot longer. It's a good thing she's guiding me, because I have no clue where I'm going or what I'm supposed to do. My dad took off 15 minutes ago to deal with the cratering of the most important deal of his career, thanks to me. And Charlotte is history. I tried to find her, but she's vanished in a puff of smoke. I could call her from Harper's phone, but as the reality settles in like a dead weight in my heart, I'm not so sure I'm ready for that kind of self-inflicted torture just now. Hey, Charlotte. That's a bummer that you're not into me, but I had some ideas for our new marketing campaign. Oh, good. Glad you like my plans to sell more shots. Nachos are on you tonight. Okay. What's on the to-do list? I ask, my voice hollow. Any chance it involves me waking up from this nightmare? She scoffs as she tugs me closer to avoid a skateboarder. No. Welcome to your life, Spencer Holiday. Your big mouth has gotten you in a lot of trouble, and you need to dig yourself out of this hole. It's kind of the size of a black hole, though, Nick says. Do you have a shovel that'll work on something that deep? I want to laugh. I really do. Instead, I scowl. While you work on finding that shovel, maybe you can also let me know what to do about Charlotte. Seeing as I now run a business with a woman who served me walking papers on home plate. My sister shoots me a look that could burn up asphalt. She's not the first item on the to-do list, Spence. She's not? Harper shakes her head as the path spills out of the park and we curve onto Fifth Avenue. She points, far in the distance, down the avenue. There. 10 blocks away you'll find a jewelry store. Up on the 6th floor is our father's office. You need to go see him and grovel. My shoulders sag, and I sigh heavily. I really fucked this up. Nick laughs sympathetically. You did, man. But now it's time to unfuck it. I hold my hands out wide. A horse-drawn carriage clacks along Fifth Avenue behind us. How does that work? I'm familiar with fucking, but unfucking. Is that like pulling out early? Nick shakes his head. Not exactly. It's a new scientific discovery, though. Like reverse osmosis, but instead of water, it filters out your fuck-up. Got it now? Harper rolls her eyes. Guys, focus. Now is not the time to practice one-upsmanship in smartassery.
I drag a hand roughly through my hair.
All right, let's do this. What is step one?
Harper draws a deep breath and turns to Nick.
Should we tell him or let him figure it out on his own?
Nick screws up the corner of his mouth, then pushes his glasses higher.
Not sure his brain is working at full speed today.
Tell me what? Were you two talking about this already?
Yeah, duh.
When you tried to run off to find Charlotte, she says, and I wince at the reminder of how I raced off to catch up to her after Rihanna's song screeched to a halt. But the blonde beauty was long gone, leaving me nursing this black and blue heart. Meanwhile, she has my phone, keys, and wallet, so I'm operating blind. Penniless, too.
And what did you decide I need to do?
Dude, first you need to apologize to your dad for lying. You need to explain why you did it, that it came from the right place, but that it was a mistake and you're sorry, Nick says, taking on the role of straight shooter.
I nod.
Got it. I can do that.
Then you need to try to fix this mess, Harper says, chiming in.
How?
You should ask to talk to Mr. Offerman. See if you can smooth things over.
I cringe at the thought of groveling to that asshat. He doesn't want to have anything to do with Dad anymore.
That's right now, Nick says. Tempers flare in the heat of the moment. See if he cools down. You've got to try.
I nod, taking this all in, knowing they're right.
And if that doesn't work?
They lock eyes again, then look back at me.
You're the way to unfucking it, Harper says.
Oh, shit, I say in a heavy voice as it hits me exactly how I'll have to reverse osmosis this fuck-up for my dad. Harper gives me a $10 bill. I feel like a grade schooler clutching his allowance.
Now, only use it if you need to take a bus home, dear, she says, like a parent admonishing a child.
She gives me a shove toward the entrance of Catherine's.
Go.
I head inside, sticking out like a sore thumb with my gym shorts and ball cap. I make my way to the elevator and press the button for the 6th floor. After the doors close with a whoosh, I inhale and exhale, fighting to keep my focus on my dad, not on Charlotte. Not on the worst words I'd ever heard in my life. It was never real. I don't know how I could have misread things between us so badly. I was so damn sure we not only had epic chemistry, but so much more. But that must just be the cocky bastard in me, making assumptions that the woman wanted me. When the woman doesn't lie. She made that clear from the start. She said she's a terrible liar, which means everything she said at the ball field was true. How the hell am I supposed to go back to working by her side, to running a business with her? When the elevator reaches my dad's floor, the doors slide open. I step out and see a familiar face. Nina walks toward me, dressed in a crisp suit, even on a Saturday. But then, Saturdays are the store's busiest days.
Hey there, are you looking for your dad?
I nod.
I am. Is he in his office?
Yes, he's working on some contracts. A flicker of hope ignites in me. Maybe the deal is back on. Maybe the kerfuffle blew over in mere minutes. Maybe there are Walmarts on Jupiter. Still, I have to ask, is Mr. Offerman in there?
No,
she says with a small smile, then drops a hand gently on my arm.
But go see him.
She leaves, and I draw a deep breath, square my shoulders, and walk to my father's office. Whatever is coming, whether anger or disappointment, I will take it like a man. I knock, and Dad says to come in. He's at his desk, still wearing his softball jersey, his fingers poised over the keyboard. I can't read the expression in his eyes. I seize the moment, the words tumbling out in a traffic jam. Dad, first of all, I owe you a huge apology. I lied to you and tricked you, and I'm sorry. You raised me better than that.
I should never have pretended I was engaged, but in my defense, I thought, stupidly, that it would be the thing you needed for the deal. When I met Mr. Offerman, he so clearly didn't like my past or my reputation, I sketch air quotes, so I thought I could simply be engaged for a week as you finished the deal. It wasn't Charlotte's idea, it was mine. I thought I was doing the right thing and making sure that my past wouldn't be the reason your deal went sour. But instead it went sour anyway because of me. Spencer, he begins, his lips twitching. I hold up a hand and shake my head. I should have been honest with Mr. Offerman at breakfast the next day, and I should have been honest with you, but I wasn't. You said all those nice things about Charlotte before Fiddler, too, and I felt like a schmuck for lying to you. You taught me to be better than that. I sigh and say the hardest part. But at some point, it stopped being a lie. Because even though it started as a fake engagement, it became real for me, and I fell in love with her. The corners of his mouth curve up. Spencer, he tries again. But I keep going, standing on the other side of his desk, my mea culpa pouring out of me. But that doesn't matter because you heard what she said. My voice chokes with sadness as I recall her awful words. She doesn't feel the same, and that's that. I'm sorry that I took advantage of you with the entire charade, and I know I can't make it up to you, but I want to try. Then I dive into what I've realized I must do to make this right. I know what you want most in the world, to retire and spend more time with Mom. I know that's why you wanted to sell Catherine's. I'm not asking you to hand it over to me. I'm not asking you to give me your business. But I'm volunteering my time. I'm offering to run the business for you. At no charge, of course, I say with a small laugh, because even in these moments, you need to keep your sense of humor. My dad's eyes sparkle as he listens. I'm good at business. I might be terrible at relationships, and I clearly have no clue what women really want, and I have an ego that's far too big to fit on any city bus, but I'm a rock star at running all sorts of businesses. I'd love to make this up to you and be your substitute teacher while you take your time off and we find you another buyer. I take a breath. And even though I never wanted to run the store, and even though he never intended for me to do so, it feels good to man up and make the offer. To let him know that I'm willing to fix my mistakes. Dad rises, walks around his desk, and crosses his arms. He stands with his heels digging into the carpet of his office, his dark eyes taking me in. The weird thing is, he doesn't look pissed. Chapter 27. You're right, son. I'm not happy you lied. I'm not happy you made up a whole pretend engagement. And I'm not happy you felt you had to be anything other than yourself in order for me to have what I want. He stops to squeeze my shoulder. But I did raise you right, because to do what you just did is all I could ask for. I'm glad to do it, Dad, I say, and soon it will start to feel true. I'll pour my heart into it, because God knows I need to get my mind off Charlotte. Maybe I'll even let her buy me out of the bar so I won't have to see her anymore. Seeing the woman who broke my heart every day will sting like a yellow jacket with rabies. Dad claps my back, then tugs me in for a hug. You're a good guy. I'm proud of you for owning up to this and for trying to fix it. He lets go, parks his hands on my shoulders, and sighs happily. But I'm not going to let you. I knit my brow. Why not? He laughs. His eyes twinkle. Because you saved me. Because I was racking my brains when it was my turn at bat, trying to figure out how to get out of this deal gracefully. I was having second thoughts about selling to that pompous, chauvinistic pig in the first place, and you gave me the perfect out. He points to his paper shredder on the floor and brushes one palm against the other. Good thing the papers weren't filed. A smile spreads across my face, the first one I've felt since Charlotte chopped up my heart, julienned it, and ate it for a snack. Fine. Maybe that's traumatic. But the organ in my chest is pulverized. My dad's grin, however, doesn't hurt. He really was a pig, I say, with a quirk in my lips. He was completely disrespectful to women, to his wife, to his daughters. I can't have the Catherine's legacy carried on by someone like that. No, you can't. Leave it to us for a little bit longer as we find a better man or woman to sell it to, I say, and a burst of pride courses through me. I'm proud of my dad for making this choice. He clucks his tongue. Here's the thing. I already found someone. My eyes widen.
You did?
Yes. Not to sell it to. He stops to roam his eyes over the office and then to the door as if he's reflecting on all that's beyond. But to run this place while I kick back. I'm not ready to let Catherine's go, even if I am completely ready to work less. Okay, I ask tentatively. Who is it? But the instant the words make landfall, I know who it is. Something in my head clicks, like a lock sliding into place. I snap my fingers. Nina! You asked Nina to take over day-to-day operations? He nods and beams. And she said yes. He taps his finger against the papers on his desk. That's what I was working on when you came in. Her new contract. She'll be CEO of Catherine's, and I'll remain as founder and owner while I sail across the seven seas with your mother. You are such a romantic, I say, shaking my head in admiration. She's perfect for it. She's been with you from the start, and no one knows the business better. Exactly, he says, then strides over to his couch by the window overlooking Midtown Manhattan. But since I am a hopeless romantic, and since I have been happily married for 35 years, and since I know a little something about what women want, let's talk about how you're going to win back Charlotte. I saw the way the two of you look at each other. He pats the couch. I sink down next to him, my limbs heavy. Love the thought, but she made it clear she's not into me. Hmm. Hmm, what? Did she, though? He asks, quizzically. I believe her exact words were, it was never real. Those were her words, and generally speaking, I believe a man should pay keen attention to a woman's words. But sometimes actions speak louder, and what did Charlotte's actions tell you? An image of her yanking off her ring mocks me. That she doesn't feel the same, I say bluntly. No point mincing words. He saw the same thing. Or maybe not. He tilts his head to the side and raises an eyebrow. He shakes his head. I saw a woman who put her heart on the line for you. I stare at him. His words don't compute. I saw a woman who took the fall for you, he continues, gesturing from him to me. You and I both know that Charlotte didn't ask you to be her fiancé. You asked her. She said yes to you. She wanted to help you. And today, she wanted to help you too. It might not have worked the way she intended, but she was trying to save this deal because she cares about you. She was trying to help you stay out of trouble by throwing herself under the bus. Something comes alive inside me again. Not an alien or anything weird like that, but a racing heart, a spiking pulse, a thrilling possibility. Holy shit, I say under my breath, cycling back through the day, the morning, last night. The sandwiches, the noodles, the whiskey, the broken rules, the jealousy, the pure private moments of bliss and connection. Last night, and the way she said she was falling. How she looked when she was naked on top of me. I grab the collar of my t-shirt and tug. Whoa, it's hot in here. Not my brightest move to linger on a sex memory. I shove it aside. Most of all, I rewind to how she was always saving me from me. From the very start of this affair, right through to the end, she saved the day when I needed her most. I need to find her, I say, patting my pockets. They're empty. Oh, shit. She has my phone, and my wallet, and my keys. Good, because we're not moving that fast. Why not? Shouldn't I just go to her place and tell her how I feel or something? Or something? He arches a brow as he mimics me. You might know a thing or two about how to land the ladies for a night, but I know how to win one woman for a lifetime, he says,
tapping his heart. Your dad happens to be a hopeless romantic. So let the master give the apprentice some lessons in winning back a woman. I stand and hand over the reins. I always did kick ass in school. Teach me your secrets. He surveys my attire. First, we need to get you into some decent clothes. I don't have my wallet. He rolls his eyes. I bought your first onesie. I think I can spring for a nice pair of slacks now. Dad, that's fine and all, but can you swear to never say that word again in relation to me? I say as we leave his office. Onesie, you mean? I nod. He shrugs. I'll do my best to never discuss how adorable you looked in a little baby blue onesie. Dad, right. You weren't adorable in it. You were manly and rugged. Have I mentioned I have the coolest dad in the universe? Chapter 28. I look sharp. I'm rocking a pair of charcoal gray pants, a navy blue button-down, and new shoes. And, wait for it, I'm freshly showered, too. Yep, Dad took me shopping and let me use the guest shower at his home. And damn, do I clean up well. He wouldn't let me call Charlotte, though. And yes, I do know her number. It's one of maybe two I have committed to memory. Hers and the Chinese food delivery joint. Instead, he called her and inquired politely if she was still available to see me tonight. Evidently, she said yes, so he told her I would be arriving at 6. As the town car I hired pulls up to her building, I feel a bit like a teenager arriving for prom. Except I don't have a corsage or teenage stamina. Grown past that one, thank you very much. But the nerves are the same, and mine are sky high. I step out of the car and head to the doorman. He buzzes her, and I wait, pacing in the entryway, checking my watch, counting the number of tiles on the floor. 3 interminable minutes later, Charlotte crosses the lobby. She wears a cranberry skirt and a black top. It's the outfit I took her ring shopping in. The fact that she's wearing it knocks the breath from my lungs. It feels like a sign. As she nears me, I take in every detail. Her hair hangs loose and beautiful down her shoulders. Her lips are red and glossy. Her legs are bare, and she wears black high heels. I'm not sure I've ever told her that those shoes are my favorite, and somehow it turns me on even more that the ones she likes wearing are the ones I like seeing her in. I can't believe it's been only 8 hours since I've seen her. She stops in front of me, narrows her eyes, points. I don't know whether to kiss you or punch you, because I've been sending text messages all day to my purse, she says, dropping her hand into her purse and hunting around. She grabs my phone and thrusts it at me, and the first text I see makes me grin. That was the biggest lie I ever told. Call me. Her jaws set hard and she glares at me. Oh, and I called you several times, too, before I remembered I had your phone. I was basically messaging myself all day. You had the ringer on silent, you idiot. Idiot seems to be the theme of the day when it comes to me, I say, but I'm smiling because this is another reason why I love her madly. The fact that she marched up to me and called me out. She parks her hands on her hips. Do you even want to know what my messages said? I do, I say, taking her hand and lacing my fingers through hers. God, it feels good to touch her again. It feels out of this world amazing when she squeezes back, her hand fitting mine so perfectly. But right now, I want to take you out. To the restaurant in Chelsea, she asks as we reach the door of the gleaming black town car. Yes, but not yet. First, I'm taking you on a themed tour of New York. I gesture to her building. This is stop one on the Lessons I Learned in the Last Week tour. She arches an eyebrow, inviting me to say more. Right here is where I was really dense, I say. How were you really dense? Because the day I asked you to be my fake fiancé,
I actually believed I could pull it off, and it wouldn't change a thing, I say, as I lift the handle of the car and hold the door for her. I watch her slide into the cool, air-conditioned back seat. She looks edible. Did it change things? She asks, her voice rising on the question. I nod as I get into the car next to her and pull the door shut. It did. She swallows. What's stop two, then? I gesture north. A restaurant called McCoy's. Heard of it? I ask, as the car zips uptown, weaving through Saturday evening traffic. I believe I'm familiar with it. I'm so curious what you learned there. When we reach the restaurant where we had our first dinner with the Offermans, I hold her hand and escort her out of the car. We don't go inside, though. We stand under the green awning, and I touch her hair, stroking the strands that fall onto her shoulder. Her breath hitches as my fingers make contact with her skin. As you may recall, we were here only 1 week ago. We had practiced kissing on the street and in your apartment, I say, then lean in to brush a kiss to her cheek. She trembles. But none of those practice sessions prepared me for the lesson I learned here when you kissed me at the table.
What lesson was that?
How much I liked fake kissing with you. A grin spreads across her face.
And real kissing?
Even better. In fact, let me just refresh your memory of how much we both like it. I cup her cheeks and capture her delicious mouth with mine. I kiss her hard, like I'm reminding her of all that's in store for us. Her arms loop around me, her breasts press to my chest, and she melts into the kiss, making those sexy sighs and murmurs that are like a current surging through me. Other things will be surging soon, too, if we keep this up. And while that's precisely what I want, I'm not done yet with the tour. 20 minutes later, we roll up to Gin Joint, and I lead her into the sultry, sexy bar where she drove me wild. This is where I was a complete idiot. Her hand slinks up my arm, and a shudder racks through me.
How?
Because of that, I say.
Because of what?
Because when you touch me, it turns me on like nothing ever has in my life, I say in a husky voice as I tug her close. Yet for some crazy reason, I thought I could resist you. She laces her hands in my hair and whispers,
"So silly."
She shakes her head in admonishment, now fully playing along with the tour. You think that's silly, then wait till you hear what's next. If I were to take you to the next spot, you'd realize the height of my ridiculousness. I would, she asks, as I walk her to the car and the cool back seat. Yes, because after I took you home that night, I returned to my house and took matters into my own hand. You rode me hard in my fantasies. Her eyes light up with the realization, and then her fingers tap dance across my leg.
That's so hot. I want to watch someday.
Yeah, I want to watch you do that, too. I curl a hand around her head, bring my lips to her ear, and whisper, 3 times that night, and somehow I thought I could get you out of my system that way.
Oh, Spencer, she whispers. I thought the same thing, too.
Our lips crash together as the driver pulls away. We kiss hungrily, erasing the hours apart, the lies, the pretending. We kiss until our lips are bruised. We kiss until we reach the next destination, the corner of 43rd. It's 6:45 now, and theater traffic has begun, so we don't stop the vehicle. I point through the tinted windows. Strangest thing happened on that corner.
What was so strange? She asks,
her happy tone telling me she wants the answers as much as I love giving them. I wasn't a complete idiot that night. I made sure to tell you the full truth, that I was jealous of anyone else who'd ever had you, which was really my way of saying I don't want anyone else to have you, I say, then brush my lips against the hollow of her throat. Ever.
I feel the same, she says,
her smile like sunshine as she grabs her phone again, this time showing me the messages she sent right after she left this morning.
Look. Just look. About that horrid lie. It hurts so much to say that. I didn't mean it. It feels so real to me. Do you feel it too?
I look up from the screen and press my hand to her chest, over her heart. It thunders under my hand. Yes, Snuffleupagus. I feel it everywhere. She giggles when I use her term of endearment.
Me too. But before we fully explore everywhere, I really want you to read the rest of these, she says, as she peels my hand off her chest and presses her phone into my palm. Oh, great. I just realized I'm sending all these text messages to myself, because your phone is lighting up my purse. Okay. So yeah, this sucks. You've got to know I only said that on the field to try to help. I was trying to stick to the plan, to make it all believable. I have no idea if it worked. Ugh, I feel awful now. I messed things up even worse, didn't I? I'm talking to myself. But look what I found. Seems I have your keys and wallet, too. You have a lot of credit cards. I've been meaning to get a new Kate Spade and some Louboutins. Where are you? Don't you know where I live? I'm not relinquishing this phone unless you feel the same way. I swear if I see you and it turns out this is a one-way street, you will never get this phone back. It will die a fast, painless death by the hammer of my embarrassment. So if you're reading these messages, it must mean only one thing. You're crazy for me, too.
I'm so crazy for you, too, I say, and our lips come together again. Before the moment can turn heated, before she can climb on top of me like I want her to, we somehow make it to Central Park and the baseball field. The car idles on the path, waiting for us as I walk her to the grass. Another game is underway. A pizzeria is batting against a shoe store chain. I pull Charlotte close to me. But this, I say, pointing to the ground. This is where I was a huge dumbass. She grins.
Why's that?
Because right here, earlier today. I take a breath, letting it fuel me to finally share my whole heart. This is where the woman I love went to bat for me. She gasps when I use the L word. I should have told you then that I love you. I should have said everything to you. Inching closer, I press my forehead to hers. I should have told you I'm madly in love with you, and I want you to be mine. When you told me it wasn't real, I was devastated.
Spencer, I didn't mean it. I said it to try to fix things.
I know that now. I was foolish then. But it was all for the best. Because feeling like I lost you made me realize I'd do whatever it takes to have you. Because you're the one. You've been in front of me all along, and in some ways, I feel like I fell in love with you quickly, in only 1 week. But in other ways, I know I've been falling in love with you over time, over the years. It just took faking it for me to realize that you're the only woman I've ever loved. But more than that, you're the only woman I want to love. I brush the backs of my fingers against her cheek. Her eyes are lit with joy. I recognize the emotion because I feel it with her.
And I know that because I want to eat the green gummy bears for you so you never have to taste them. And I want to sit through the torture of Fiddler on the Roof with you, and drink virgin margaritas some nights, and non-bad beer other nights, and put you in bed if you're tired and have a headache, and make love to you all night long if you don't.
Her lips part, and she sighs contentedly. She grabs at my collar, pulling me even closer.
I don't have a headache tonight, and I want to do that all night long, too. I want to do that because I broke the same rule. I'm so in love with you that I'd kiss you with morning breath, and I'll even scrape pesto mayo off your sandwiches for you if anyone serves it to you by mistake, she says, locking her gaze to mine.
I hope that never happens. My tone is intensely serious, because I don't want you to have to go anywhere near pesto mayo or bad breath. But if it does, I want us to deal with both horrors together.
Me too, she says, then kisses me, a deep, passionate kiss that seals all these lessons I learned. When she breaks the kiss, she raises a suggestive eyebrow. Leftover cold sesame noodles at your house instead of dinner out?
You're on, I say, since I know what she wants, and I want the same thing.
Oh, wait. There's one more thing I want you to know, she says, running her hand down the buttons on my shirt, a prelude to what we'll both be doing soon.
What is it?
Remember when I thought I couldn't pull this off?
I remember.
I was able to because being with you rarely felt lying. It was easy to pretend to be yours.
Why? I ask, gripping her hips.
It didn't feel fake. It always felt like it was becoming real.
It is real, I say, locking eyes with her. I am rooted to this moment. It is the new hub of Charlotte and me, and I want to see and feel and taste all of it. But I also want to taste her. Right about now. Know what else is real?
What else?
She asks playfully, her tone telling me she knows where my thoughts are headed. How much I want you this second. It's very real. It's like 10 inches of real, I say, leaning into her so she can feel how much I crave her. She arches an eyebrow.
10? I would have guessed 12.
Starts at 10, finishes at 12. I joke as I clasp her hand and return to the town car with her. Once inside, I ask the driver to close the partition. After the tinted window clicks into place, we are cocooned.
I'll take the 10 now, please.
Ah, so you do want an appetizer before the Chinese dinner inn, I say, running my hand down her spine and over her rear, squeezing her ass.
No, Spencer, I want dessert first.
I lift her on top of me. Appetizer, dessert, the main course, let's have it all, I say, raising the fabric of her skirt, and she works open my zipper. In seconds, I tug her panties to the side, roll on a condom, and lower her onto my shaft. We moan at the same time, then we kiss and we fuck for the next few blocks. Then we kiss hard and fuck harder as the car whips downtown, my hands tugging on her hair, her fingernails clawing my shoulders, our lips smashing together as we consume each other hungrily. We fuck as if it's been weeks since we were together, when it's only been hours. But I'll take this. This need for another person, especially since tonight, is as good as it's always been. But it's worlds better, too, because it's not ending. There's no expiration date in sight, no ground rules, and no pretending. The night turns into a marathon of sex and sesame noodles, of food and orgasms, of laughter and more of the L word than I ever expected to utter. We test out the strength of my coffee table and it passes. Though my knees get bruised, I don't care. A little later, Charlotte suggests a shower just for fun. And since I'm a fan of fun showers, I say yes. When she kneels on the tiles, she treats me to the best shower I've ever had in my life, and does something so intense with her tongue that I've got to remember to ask her if she can tie a knot in a cherry with it, too. Not that it matters. I have no use for knotted cherries, but I have lots and lots of uses for her tongue. Mine, too, as I indulge in another taste of her after midnight when we go to bed. Then, we fool ourselves into thinking we'll sleep. But instead, I slide inside her as we spoon in the dark. Fido provides the harmony, purring loudly when she comes, and together they sound like a mini earthquake.
Charlotte, I have a confession to make, I tell her, as I run my fingers through her hair while she comes down from her high. Spit it out.
My cat's a pervert.
She laughs. Sounds like the three of us will get along fine, then.
I think so, too.
Epilogue. 1 month later. We're the only ones at the lucky spot. The last drink was served an hour ago, and now we're done closing up. I grab my keys from the office, and she shoulders her purse.
Your place or mine? She asks playfully.
Then she answers it with, I mean, ours. Her lease runs out at the end of this month, so she moved in with me a week ago. She hogs the sheets, and I sleep naked, so that might be a problem in the winter, but aside from that, life with her is pretty much perfect. Add in the fact that Abe's article never ran, since there was no sale of Catherine's, only a fake engagement that turned into a genuine love story. I'm a happy camper, and so is my dad, who's somewhere in the Mediterranean now, while Nina runs the store. The only thing that would make this moment more perfect is a bottle of wine. Before we leave, let's have a quick glass, I say, heading behind the bar and grabbing a bottle I picked out for the night. She shoots me a curious look from her side of the bar. Do you want to just have that at home? I shake my head. Nope. Here. I pour a glass for myself, then one for her. I slide it across the bar. I hold mine up to toast. To recreations. She furrows her brow. What? You're not making any sense. Work with me. It'll make sense soon. I take a drink, then set down my glass. Isn't it funny how everyone thinks we're a couple? But we are a couple, she says, shaking her head and tapping the glass. Were you drinking a lot before you cracked this one open, Holiday? I'm undeterred. We need a story, I say, reminding her of what she told me in her kitchen the day we first decided to fake it. Remember? I ask, prompting her. One Thursday night at the Lucky Spot over a glass of wine after closing time. Recognition dawns, and her brown eyes twinkle. Yes, if memory serves, you said what you just said. I repeat myself, holding her gorgeous gaze captive. Isn't it funny how everyone thinks we're a couple? She remembers her line, her made-up, make-believe line about how we came together. Maybe we should be one. I say nothing. She doesn't speak either. We both recall the script and how it called for an awkward pause. When the pause is weighted with enough awkward, I speak, the corner of my lips curving up. But this time there's more after the awkward pause, I say, then dip my hand into my pocket. What happens next? She asks breathily, her palms pressed on the counter, anticipation evident in how her shoulders curve toward me. A magic trick. Show me. I leave my post and walk around the bar. When I reach her, I wave one hand behind her left ear, then I take my other hand out of my pocket and brush it behind her right ear. Look what I found behind your ear, I say, then open my palm in front of her. Oh, God, she says, her voice catching. I bend down to one knee and take her hand. I have a proposition for you. When we first played Make-Believe Fiancé, you used two words that we both swore we'd never hear again. But even then they sounded perfect coming from you. Mrs. Holiday. And that's because you're the only one I ever want to be, Mrs. Holiday, and I hope you think it sounds as sexy and beautiful as I do. Will you marry me? I love being propositioned by you, so the answer is yes, she says, as a tear slips down her cheek. Never has one word been more perfect. I hold up the ring, letting the stone catch the light from above. This is the ring you picked out, the one you wanted, the one that's perfect for you. It's also the ring I got for you the first time, and it's the one I want you to wear for always, I say, as she holds out her hand. Put it on me, she says, in between happy sobs. It's the only one I want. You're the only one I want. I slide it on her ring finger for the second time, and I know that it will be the forever time. Another epilogue. 6 months later. My wife is fucking awesome. But don't just take my word for it. Consider all her accomplishments. She's bright, she's beautiful, she's funny, and she married me. End of story. Oh, wait. There's one more thing I have to say. So, yeah, we broke pretty much all the rules. We had sleepovers, and we lied, and it was weird, and we fell in love, and it didn't last a week. It's lasting a lifetime. There are two rules we kept, though. Remember how we agreed to stay friends? We remain friends. Best of friends. Now, you're probably wondering about that other rule. Charlotte held fast on that one, but I'm not missing a thing. Especially considering how well she can tie cherry stems with her tongue. I'm the luckiest bastard on the face of the earth, because I'm madly in love with the woman I come home to every night. My wife. My best friend. And I make her happy every night. If you know what I mean. And I think you do. Happy wife equals happy life. This has been Big Rock, written by Lauren Blakely, narrated by Sebastian York, produced by Tyler Whitlatch. Copyright 2016.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.